Welcome back, Conference USA fans. You're tuning in to another episode of CUSA Insider, the official podcast of Conference USA. I'm your host, Sarah Rudolph, and we are here to talk all about what happened in week four and take a look ahead at week five of CUSA football. Joining me today, back on the set, we have Josh Yonas. Thank you so much for being here to talk some more football. It was a fun weekend.
It was a fun weekend. There were a lot of games, the 11 games, and I feel like it was all in that like 5 to 7-ish window. I had to come up here to the office because you guys can't see it, but we have a big wall of 9 TVs on the back here. So me and Trey were just hanging out, got some pizza. We were just watching some ball. It was great. I just, you know, eyes just kind of flowing screen to screen, trying to keep up with all the action. So we're going to do our best to relay all of that and kind of put a nice little bow on week four, but talk about week five.
Because it was a lot, like you said, it was a lot. And I can't imagine what it's like to be up here at the office watching them all, because our group text or group thread on Teams, whatever you want to call it, is always very lively on a Saturday afternoon. It's a lot of fun.
There's a lot going on. Yep. So, but before we get into week four, we got to talk about our top plays from week four. There are some really good ones.
Yeah, I'm excited. Also a lot of fun is the top plays from this week. So let's take a look at these, you guys. Coming in at number five on the countdown, we have, here it is,
Trevor Woods making a great read here. I mean, you see him at the beginning of the play when we kind of get another loop here. You know, reads the motion man, comes over and just completely cuts the play off. Just really great vision from him to get in front of this one and, save the defense from giving up some points.
Right. And when we were watching this before we got started, I missed it entirely the first two times that it was played. Yeah. It does. It happens quick. So good hands there from Trevor Woods. Looking at number four now on our countdown, we have Amari Odom's 14-yard rushing touchdown. It's a beauty.
Back in the top plays again. Yeah, you see him make a great move here at the beginning of the play. Oh, juke the defender and then rumbles his way into the end zone. It seems like he's just impossible to stop when he gets near the goal line. We saw him with the spin move last week and kind of, you know, juking around a few guys. So, his moves in that short yardage, position is insane.
Incredible. And he had a great game, which we'll talk about in just a little bit. But number three on the countdown, Kyrie DuPlessis back in the top five.
Third one in 4 weeks. This man, I mean, is just literally a walking highlight reel, a walking top play. On his first career punt return, goes 68 yards for the touchdown and secures himself
special teams player of the week. Let's go. All right, here we go. Number two on our countdown, we have Jarius Maxx, 32-yard reception for WKU against Nevada.
I thought when I first saw it that he mossed him. I mean, it was still an incredible catch, but
yes, very highly contested for him to be able to go up and make that grab. There might have been a flag, I don't know, that should have been thrown on that play, but we'll see.
And really, it was kind of like these two, we'll see it with number one here, but two and one, it was really like 1A, 1B, because these are both amazing catches. I had a hard time deciding which one should be which, but I think the more I watched, the number one was more than deserving.
Number one makes a case for catch of the year here. Devin Gandy, one-handed grab. It is incredible. I mean, he like does this little flip. I can't even explain it. It's just great.
Well, somersault action. I mean, a great throw from Blake Baker here to get it, you know, where only he can get that ball.
Yep.
Just a great move to haul that one in. So, they were some just really fun plays.
There were some good ones this week. I don't envy you guys for having to choose them each and every week. I'm sure there's some fans out there that think that we miss a few from now and then, but yeah, we'll maybe put it out to the masses at some point for you guys to let us know which ones we missed. But
we always appreciate the, you know, fan submissions. So if you, yeah, you know, we're reading our mentions. So
give me your opinions. Yeah. We have thick skin. We'll take your opinions for sure.
We're watching 11 football games. You guys are watching one. So it's all harder for us to keep track of all the great plays.
This is very, very true for sure. Well, let's talk about all of those 11 games that we watched on Saturday. Week four, we saw some really great things out of Conference USA football. Some things that may have surprised some people out there, especially if they've been watching some of these teams play through the first 3 weeks of the season. So I don't know. Where do you want to start?
Well, let's start. We got a special interview later that we'll kind of tease a little bit. We'll start with Kennesaw State.
All right.
Against Arkansas State. This was, you know, going into this one, we talked about whether Kennesaw could really stack the wins because they got the one that we really anticipated them to get against Merrimack College. But this was their first big opportunity and their last non-conference opportunity to pick up a win. And they pull this one out. They got a quick start. They let Arkansas State kind of in it back at the end, but they seal the deal. Back-to-back wins for the first time since 2022. So that's got to be special for this program. Obviously, I doubt that any of the guys on this team were around back then. So,
I don't know, maybe.
Yeah, maybe. I don't know. In this era, you know, I just assume that no one's been somewhere more than 2 years. But so really special for them to be riding hot into conference play. They finished 2-2, which was, I kind of felt it was best case scenario for them. They had two Power Four opponents and then, you know, the FCS game in a big G5 opportunity. So really like where they're sitting. But yeah, jumped out to a 21-0 lead in the first quarter. They outgamed the Red Wolves 225-63.
Yep. It's incredible. I looked at the box score for this game before we interviewed Jerry Mack, who is our interview later in the segment. So stick around for that, especially you Owls fans out there. But we talked a lot about that, how they jumped out early, how they kind of trailed off there towards the end. But defense at the end of that game had to make a bunch of huge stops for the Owls in order to get them that victory. And we talked about it during top plays. Amari Odom had an incredible game. Record-breaking game for him. It was career high in total yards for a quarterback, career high in receptions also in a game for a quarterback. So he had a great game. And then the guys on both sides of the ball, a lot of them had career high games and tackles and rush yards and receptions. And so it was just a really good showing, I think, all over the board from the Owls. And like you said, going into conference play against a Middle Tennessee team who we've seen some good flashes of and some not so good flashes of over the last couple of weeks. So we'll talk a little bit more about that game here in a minute, but I liked what I saw out of the Owls. And then, I mean, he beat his alma mater. It's pretty great.
Yeah, that was kind of a cool storyline. And I'm sure, yeah, that was in the back of his head a little bit. But yeah, very productive day for the Owls. And again, like you said, with the defense, you gave up a touchdown that, you know, got him within one score early in the fourth quarter. But then the last three possessions for the Red Wolves, 2-3 and outs, and a turnover on down. So, you know, again, we talked about it last week with Delaware doing, you know, what they needed to do when they needed it most on defense, even though they kind of let UConn and just keep coming back. We saw that with Kennesaw State, where it was like, hey, all right, they only need one score to tie this game up. They really locked them down and helped them seal that win.
Yep, so, for sure. One. Well, you mentioned Delaware, so let's just keep talking about Delaware.
Great how I did that, right?
Right? Yeah. Thank you for the segue. The Blue Hens went in to Miami and I think surprised a lot of people, myself included. Mm-hmm. Now, don't get me wrong. After seeing their performance against UConn last week, I had high hopes for this team going into Miami, but FIU has been playing really, really well. So I just didn't really know if we were going to get a Delaware victory, whether FIU was going to come and show out and just, you know, be the team we've seen them be the last couple of weeks. But I was really surprised, pleasantly surprised by the Blue Hens.
No, absolutely. And I think that you saw just dominance in all phases of the game, right? I mean, offensively, they were super efficient. Defensively, I think we saw one of their best performances of the, you know, of the season. And then as we saw, you know, with Kyrie Duplessis on top plays, they, you know, you get a punt return touchdown. So really in all facets of this game, they were beating FIU. To me, one of the stats that jumped out, they were 11 of 16 on third down. FIU could not get off the field on defense. They allowed Nick Minicucci to just drain some clock, build some drives. They were 6 for 6 on third and short in this game. So
that's so important in football. So important.
Absolutely. And then just, you know, kind of revisiting a few things that I had talked about in our preview and then also in my, kind of primer that I put out on Friday, talked about how these two teams were both towards the top of CUSA in red zone offense and defense. Delaware certainly got the edge in this one. They executed in the red zone. They held FIU to 3 of 5 in the red zone, including, you know, a big interception in the end zone that kept them off the board, yep. You know, right there early in the game. They won the time possession battle. As I mentioned, they were able to just keep, you know, building methodical drives by extending on third downs. And then, you know, I said, I was like, all right, we need more from the defense, right? Because they had given up, you know, 31 points to Colorado, 41 points to UConn. And they answered the call, right? They only gave up 16 points to a really talented FIU offense. And you forced two turnovers. You had two big interceptions that, you know, one ended up turning them into points. The other one really just kind of helped shift the momentum so much in the Blue Hens' favor.
Yeah. I mean, I think, let me double check on my schedule really quick before I say something that's not true. But both of these teams go into bye week this week as we get prepared for our weekday CUSA slate. I think they both have a lot to talk about, some on positive, some on negative side of things, as they get prepared for this conference slate in October. So I'm not counting FIU out. Absolutely not. Just seeing what we've seen from them. I think that, you know, they have some real chances to make some waves in conference play. But we were talking about this at lunch. Delaware has some chances to make some great waves, too. Unfortunately, ineligible for the CUSA championship this year due to their transfer up from FCS. But who knows what's going to happen as we continue through October?
Yeah, I mean, we saw it a couple of years ago at Jack State. You know, they won 9 games in their first year in the league and end up, or I guess they won 8 games, you know, and wound up getting a New Orleans Bowl bid. And so I look at this Delaware team and think that, yeah, if the cards fall just the right way, that they're able to get a bowl berth. Could surprise a lot of people, depending on what kind of matchup they get there. And, you know, again, not to look too far ahead, but I mean, like you mentioned, coming off of that bye week, Delaware has a huge one in their weekday CUSA opener. They'll be hosting WKU for their first home CUSA game. That one obviously is going to have a lot of eyes on it on Friday night on CBS Sports. And then FIU wraps up their non-conference play against UConn, ironically.
Uh-huh. Look at how you did that, Josh. Hey, good job.
On Saturday, also on CBS, I believe. So both have huge opportunities in that last week there, really before everyone gets into the thick of conference play and in the thick of weekday CUSA play. So, you know, you kind of wonder if, you know, for Delaware, obviously everything is going right for them in these last two wins. You know, can they keep that going through the bye week? Or, you know, I trust that Ryan Carty, the coaching staff, will, you know, not have them resting on their laurels by any means. And then for FIU, you know, we talked about with WKU going into a bye week after a tough loss, you know, taking that one on the chin and just saying, hey, we got a lot to learn before we get a chance to, you know, get another big win in non-conference slate against UConn. So
yeah. All right. Well, let's keep on rolling through our victories from the weekend. Yeah. So Jacksonville State hosts Murray State. Tell me a little bit about what you thought about that one.
Yeah, I mean, this was just a classic Jack State win, right? You know, racked up 329 yards on the ground. They had 12 runs of 10-plus yards. I mean, the offense, they were a little slow out of the gate. You know, Murray State was first on the board, and you know, but really once they got the ball moving and everything started clicking, it was all Gamecocks in this one. Cam Cook, I mean, I think I don't know if I'd made this joke before, but I mean, it's just crazy how they, you know, it's control C, control V. You had Trey Stewart last year, who really at this point in the year started to come on. I think we've seen great things from Cam Cook already, you know, but 147 yards, 2 touchdowns for him. Just, you know, incredible athleticism.
And for any of you out there who don't know what control C, control V means, because I'm just thinking about, like, if my dad was watching this, he'd be like, what the heck did he just say? That's copy paste for this.
sorry. But I think what I liked most out of this game, you know, Andrew Paul, I think, still nursing an injury that he suffered in that Georgia Southern game. But backup running back Christian Lando had a big game in this one. And then both their quarterbacks, Gavin Wibsatt and Caden Creel, all three of those guys finished with 50-plus yards and a rushing touchdown. So it was great to see them kind of spread the love in this one. And again, really just put on another rushing clinic and execute well.
And it's got to feel good, too, to put 45 points on the board.
Yeah.
Regardless of who your opponent is, putting that many points up is got to be a good feeling.
Definitely.
Mentioning another team that put 40 plus on the board, Missouri State beats UT Martin 42-10. Jacob Clark, 5 touchdowns accounted for. Three passing touchdowns, 2 rushing touchdowns. Is that correct?
All in the first half. Too.
Wild.
I mean, he played 2 quarters in this one. He probably could have put up, you know, CUSA record numbers if it was worth him playing a whole game, which it absolutely was not. They had this one from the get. Really thought they were going to pitch a shutout until they let UT Martin get a field goal late in the fourth quarter. But yeah, this was great to see from the Bears because, again, yes, we of course expect these wins 100%. Sometimes they aren't always wins. Sometimes they aren't always as convincing as we'd like them to be.
Right.
So for a team like Missouri State, who's transitioning this year, for even them to come out and beat, you know, a team in this manner, was obviously very great to see. We talked about both of those games in our, you know, preview last week, of just kind of being, you know, tune-ups, right? And I was a little afraid that
you were gonna jinx
them. I was gonna have to, yeah, eat my, you know, eat some crow the following week. But no, both these teams took care of business, really did some great things, and I think just, you know, identified a lot of things, you know, worked in some, maybe some plays that they haven't gotten to use because they didn't want to give it away. You know, so, but yeah, all Bears in this one. Great first half, kind of allows them to cruise to a big win. So
we've talked a lot about Delaware their first year in CUSA and how they've come out swinging and showing us a lot of stuff. Missouri State, we maybe just haven't seen everything that they have against certain opponents, although they looked great against Marshall. We talked a lot about that game. But they have a huge test against WKU this upcoming weekend, which we'll talk about here in a second. But going on to WKU, WKU beats Nevada 31-16. Double loss for Nevada against CUSA teams back-to-back weeks. That's got to sting a little bit. But what did you see out of this game that you came away with a positive attitude on?
Yeah, I mean, this was awesome to see. You know, big comeback for WKU. Scored 21 points in the fourth quarter on a pair of rushing touchdowns, and then Matthew Henry just couldn't help himself. You know, had to add the kick return for a touchdown at the end. You know, maybe some other players would have gone down, but he says, "No, I'm going to get six." I mean, the game was well out of hand, so I don't think the coaches are ragging him for, you know, "Hey, you should have gone down." It, you know, I love that he went out there and got his. But yeah, I think that the most impressive thing, and you saw it, you know, if you follow WKU on Twitter, or just happen to see, you know, when they give out their game ball after the game, Tyson Helton alluded to this run game, which is something you don't talk about a lot with WKU. Mm-hmm. Just put a graphic out a few weeks ago about how they have the most passing yards in FBS over the last 4 years. And so this just hasn't been a point of emphasis for their offense, but this is what carried them to the win against Nevada. And so to be able to see them work in some complimentary, you know, production there on the ground, great game for George Hart, Lavelle Wright, Marvis Parrish, the true freshman, getting in on the action. All three of those guys just really helped them get that part of the game going. And then on the defensive side, you know, I mentioned that this was going to be an opportunity for, you know, the turnover tops to emerge, because that's something that Nevada struggled with early on in the year. WKU gets three turnovers, and yeah. So, yeah.
Y'all better watch out.
I know. Yeah, I think the only thing I'd say is, you know, just off of that one, that, you know, they get three turnovers. They didn't get any points off those turnovers. So I think just that, you know, if you're able to capitalize a little bit more on people's mistakes, that's what's going to win or lose games
right.
in conference play.
So. All right. Which we, like mentioned, huge conference matchup against those two that we just talked about. Next week. All right, so another win on the slate for Conference USA this weekend against another Sun Belt opponent. Louisiana Tech takes it to Southern Miss 30-20. I loved watching this game. Southern Miss takes on another opponent in Conference USA next week in Jacksonville State. Tell me what you saw out of this game that excited you about the Bulldogs.
Yeah, I mean, I think that obviously the defense, you know, you get a big interception return for a touchdown from Colby Fields. They don't have the nation's leader in defensive touchdown.
Not surprised.
I know, right? They've had a defensive touchdown in each of their three wins. So I think that's become obviously a big key to success for them, as we've talked about plenty. But then just another great offensive game, you know, for the Bulldogs in this one. You know, you get rushing touchdowns from Blake Baker, Amiri Huygens, Clay Tevenin. And so, yeah, just a really balanced offensive performance here. They got what they needed in the first half. They scored all 30 points in the first half. They were kind of quiet the rest of the way. And, you know, Southern Miss chipped away a little bit here and there. But obviously, again, you know, we talked about, you know, how well the defense did in this one, and enabled, you know, to, you know, kind of keep Southern Miss far away in this one. But yeah, you know, a big win. I think that we talked about how important this one was going to be, not only because it's a big G5 opportunity, but I think both of these teams have emerged as two of the most competitive G5 teams as we look at that race. I know that there's a lot of great teams in the American right now, mm-hmm. but La Tech sitting at 3-1 for the first time since 2020, with their one loss being a really good loss to LSU, obviously puts them in a really good spot.
Yeah, and 3-0 at home for the first time since 2021. I know Bulldog fans are excited about that. Lots of pomp and circumstance surrounding this game, too. They celebrated their quarter century team on the field at halftime. And like you said, they let Southern Miss back into it late. Southern Miss did score a late touchdown to make this look a lot closer than it really was and than it really felt. I remember looking at the score at the end and being like, is that correct? I feel like La Tech, kind of took it to them. But really excited about what this Bulldog team is putting together for the season. They'll have their second conference matchup, though, against UTEP this weekend. So we'll have to see how the Bulldogs fare in that one. Couple of losses on the board, unfortunately. Some tough ones for sure. We'll talk about those just quickly before we wrap up our recap segment here. But Liberty, James Madison, looked really good at the beginning. We really thought that there was going to be, some positive things. There are still some positive things to take out of this game. But we were really excited about this one. Obviously, Ethan Vasco goes down in the first half. I think that there was some stuff to overcome there in the second half for them. Just based on that alone. But tied at the half, but obviously this just did not go in their direction at the end.
Yeah, I mean, it was shaping up to be a great one, I think. And there was obviously a lot of buzz around this game. I mean, ESPN bumps it to ESPNU. It's a tie game. It's virtually even at the half. And I think James Madison was, outgaining Liberty, but they were getting killed on penalties. And so, I really thought this was going to be a great one. And then, late there in the first half, Ethan Vasco goes down, just speculation based on the hit and him being in a sling afterwards, you think collarbone or some type of, AC joint or shoulder issue. But haven't seen anything definitive on that or what the severity might be there. But I mean, that really changed the game entirely because, they try to rotate in a couple backup quarterbacks and, the second half they averaged 3 yards per play, which, I mean, if you think about it, you do the math for second, third down, that means you're sitting at 4th-and-1, on an mm-hmm. average drive. So, obviously you can see how that just wasn't getting it going for them. Just kind of let James Madison run away with this one. So hope that, they're able to get him back soon, and it's nothing too severe, because obviously he's a very pivotal piece of that offense.
Yes, and obviously they are going into another tough game against Old Dominion, another in-state rivalry, if you want to call it that, yep. This upcoming weekend, which we'll talk about here in just a few minutes. Middle Tennessee and Marshall also looked really great for a long time.
Yeah.
If you stuck around to watch that one after the 2.5-hour rain delay, kudos to you for sticking in there, but it just didn't go in the Blue Raiders' direction there at the end.
Yeah, and this is one that, I don't think the final scores is indicative. I see what
agreed.
I think when you see games like this where it gets to like that, the low 40s versus high 20s, it's usually always like a late touchdown, right? Which is what Marshall got in this instance. So I think it was a much better game than what the, the box score may tell. But yeah, over a 2-hour rain delay. Middle Tennessee did come out hot. They had 2 scoring drives on 4 plays,
mm-hmm.
Right out of the gate. So, they were, trading scores back and forth there early on. And this was great because I think, again, a loss stinks, but it is very encouraging to have seen, the offense start to click. They get 28 points. They finished the day with 373 yards, 299 yards passing. So probably one of their, I think it's their best offensive game of the season to this point. But, I mean, we talked about it in the lunchroom earlier and plenty today, just kind of recapping games. I mean, the flags
yeah.
just flying all over the field for mm-hmm. the Blue Raiders.
Yep. Tough to win a game when you shoot yourself in the foot so often.
Yeah.
So definitely, I'm sure that Coach Mason, knowing him and having talked to him several times, this is something he is definitely talking to his players about this week, is discipline on the field and making sure that there are far less flags flying in their game next weekend against Kennesaw State, which yeah. we will talk about here in just a few minutes. All right, to round out the night, which I don't even know, did this game finish before Middle Tennessee at Marshall?
It was close, because I was watching both these, towards the end of the night before I finished up my stuff, and I think they were about a minute apart, even though they started 2 hours apart.
Yeah, crazy. Well, ULM goes into El Paso against UTEP. things were not looking so great for the Miners early.
Yeah.
They came back and had a chance to win it there at the end, but just couldn't get the job done, unfortunately.
Yeah, I mean, this was, you know, again, you don't want to see a team have to come back from 31-7, but it was good to see some fight from UTEP, even though really, you know, for most of the game, it felt like it was just going to be all Warhawks in this one. They get two, you know, quick touchdowns there to freshman of the week, Wandame Davis Jr., to pull within six. And then, on the final two drives, you know, Malachi Nelson throws two picks, and which puts a damper on what I felt, you know, was an amazing performance from Malachi Nelson. I mean, he threw for over 400 yards in this game and three touchdowns. But just that late game execution couldn't really, you know, I think on both those last drives, it was either like a 3rd and 10 or 4th and 10 situation that he threw both the picks. You know, they just couldn't get it going on the first couple plays. And then you just find yourself in a bind when the defense knows exactly what you need and where you're going. They fell short. So, that one was extra tough.
Yeah, that was a tough one. And then they have a home game against who some would say is the Conference USA front runner right now in La Tech at home next week. So we'll have to see what comes out of that game. Well, that's it for our week 4 recap, guys. We're super excited to bring you a interview here with Kennesaw State head coach Jerry Mack in just a second. Stick around. All right, Conference USA fans, a special interview for you here today on CUSA Insider. Coming off their first FBS non-conference win in school history, we have Kennesaw State Owls head football coach Jerry Mack joining us here on the show today. Coach Mack, how's it going?
I'm doing well, obviously. After a win is always good.
I know. You're putting together now 2 wins in a row. How does it feel to be coming off of those 2 wins going into conference play, a game against Middle Tennessee this upcoming weekend?
Man, you know, football is a game of momentum. At the end of the day, anytime you can get wins and start stacking wins, that's what's really most important about everything. You know, we're in a position right now where we have some energy, we have some juice. Obviously, guys, support staff, coaches, they all kind of see, man, if we just do what we're supposed to do throughout the course of the week, there's an opportunity there to come out victorious and celebrate on Saturday nights. So we're really excited about, like, this opportunity the upcoming week to have the first conference game and, you know, to have that first conference game here at home in Fifth Third Stadium. It's homecoming for us as well. So should get great energy, great crowd.
You talk about the energy and the crowd. I absolutely want to ask you about that. Fifth Third Stadium was rocking this past Saturday, but you guys have 4 home games in a row. I'm not sure anyone else in Conference USA can say that. You've already got 2 wins at home. You've got 2 more conference games coming up at home. As you mentioned, this weekend is homecoming. Tell us a little bit about, 1, what it's like to play there and why the fans should come out and support you guys, but 2, to be able to stack 4 home games on top of each other like that.
Yeah, I think first thing is just the atmosphere itself. You know, it's a very family-friendly atmosphere that we have here. When you talk about all the surrounding things that's going on around the stadium, the band is out playing, there's a lot of tailgating going on. The also other thing that you look at is just like the things that are going on through the course of the game. I don't get a chance to experience a lot of that stuff. My wife and kids, they kind of tell me some of the things that's going on throughout the game, you know, doing the TV timeouts and things like that. But I do think that the energy is really electric at the stadium. It's an intimate atmosphere. The stadium is not too big. It's not too small. It's just the perfect size for the crowds that we're attracting. So really, really excited about that to get our crowd engaged in it.
Awesome. Okay. Going back to your schedule for a second, you got all your non-con games out of the way early. It's conference play from here on out. Tell me a little bit about what you're talking to your guys about having only CUSA games left. Every game means something towards a potential berth in the CUSA championship going forward. So what are you talking about in the locker room about just kind of the weight of these games going forward?
Yeah, we always talk about, like, all our hopes and dreams are right in front of us. Right now, we are really 0-0 within the conference. It's great to have those 2 wins, but it has nothing to do with, at the end of the day, we want to put ourselves in a position to play for a Conference USA championship. And all that stuff is still right there ahead of us. Those games that I talk about, kind of exhibition season, we got to get a chance to see what all our kinks are, what things we need to work out, some things we need to fine tune before we get into the games that really matter of what we came here for. And that's to try to win a Conference USA championship. So like to have those 4 four games, home games, all back-to-back. But now we got two conference games left while we're at home before we get up back on the road. It's really exciting. The one that's most important is the one that's next. And we got Middle Tennessee coming in here, and, you know, they're going to be the same way. They're going to be hungry for a win. Really well-coached football team. You know, Coach Derrick Mason has done an excellent job of putting the staff together and getting those guys playing hard constantly week in and week out. They've been battle-tested. They've had Power 4 teams. They've had the opportunity as well to come from behind and win games. So whenever you get a chance to face an opponent like that, you just know you're going to have your work cut out for you.
You certainly will, and it'll be a fun one to watch this weekend, definitely. But I'd be remiss if I didn't talk about the win that you're coming off of this past weekend against your alma mater, Arkansas State. So 21 points in the first quarter for the Owls, an incredible show of offensive power there in the first quarter. Obviously, didn't get the offense going quite as much in the third or in the second half. Third quarter, you guys grabbed another touchdown. But what was it like just to come out of the gate swinging like that in the first quarter for your team?
Well, we talk about trying to get off to a fast start, and I think obviously we did that. The first three or four possessions were all kind of scores, or we definitely moved the ball consistently down the field. The detail is the things that we talked about going forward. We talked about that all week as far as cleaning up some of the penalties. We had a ton of penalties the previous week. We cleaned up some of those things. Now, you know, the turnover bug kind of caught us as the game kind of progressed. But the resiliency of this team, to even though we turned the ball over and even though they would respond with scores, to go back down and then match a score with a score and then still move the ball, drain the clock some when we had to. All those different things that we were able to accomplish were really big for our program. It just continues to show that good teams constantly try to get better week to week, and that's what we're trying to do.
Absolutely. And you guys had some incredible showings individually on the football field this past weekend. Several program records broken. Amari Odom broke the Kennesaw State record for single game pass completions and single game total offense with 409 yards, 308 passing, 101 rushing. And then as well, Gabe Benyard, program record fourth game with 100 plus receiving yards. And a bunch of other guys had career records on the offensive and defensive side of the ball. Your team is clicking right now. What are you telling your team in the locker room? I know that you're very focused on detail-orientedness right now, but what are you saying to those guys that are just making them come out and fire on all cylinders?
Right now we're telling them don't believe any hype and don't listen to Sarah Rudolph on any social media.
Don't listen to all of the media mess. I got it.
No, but no, we're just talking about a lot about just the processes and the day-to-day kind of preparation that we need to have to be successful. You know, the win was awesome. The wins have been awesome. But also, too, if you want to get that feeling every Saturday night, there's a level of preparation and there's a price that has to be paid as we go forward and move throughout the week. And, you know, once you start learning, stacking those weeks, stacking those days, those things become naturally habit. And right now, as a young program, we're trying to get those guys to understand the habits that they need to be creating in order to feel that way Saturday.
Awesome. Well, I want to talk about Amari Odom here for just a second. Obviously, didn't get the starting job in week one, but has really shown that he can be QB1 for this team. Tell me a little bit about him and what you've seen from him as he has grown from fall camp through now.
Yeah, you know, known Amari for a very, very long time. Him and his mom and myself, we were head coaches at different sports at North Carolina Central years ago. So got a chance to know the family, know what kind of stock he comes from, what he brings to the table. The biggest growth that I've seen from him since he arrived on campus is really just his leadership. You know, you take a look at when he came in the spring and the leadership that he possessed. We had a conversation right there at the exit meeting before the summertime hit. It needed to be better. It has to get better in order for us to be a version of the team that we want to be. And he took hold of that, and he came back in the summer, and he continued to do that in fall camp. He waited for his opportunity, probably the second game of the season we played in Indiana. And so far, you know, he's been very intentional about all the small details and all the small things we talked about trying to get better. He's been extremely intentional about trying to make sure he does those things.
And then tell me a little bit about the guys who stayed with the program through a head coaching change, guys who have been there for a while, like Baron Hobson, like Gabe Benyard, who are just really program leaders. Tell me about what it's like to have those guys stay with the program and continue to be in leadership roles with the Owls going into 2025.
yeah, extremely blessed for those young men to keep those guys on our team. And they had opportunities to go different places. They believed in the vision. They believed in the systems that we were going to put in place that we felt like would allow them to have some career type figures. And you can see so far, so good. Those guys have been in a different position, not just leadership, but even schematically what we do, offense, defense, it has allowed them to really showcase their ability and excel.
Well, I know it's incredible to be able to keep those guys with the program there. And it helps the fan base, too, to have some familiar faces out there to be cheering for each and every Saturday. Well, we talked a little bit about it, but I want to ask you a couple of specific questions, not giving away too much. But as you sit here and you're preparing for a Middle Tennessee team going into conference play, what are the key things that you're either looking for from practice this week or you're telling your team going into this weekend?
I'm looking for the same preparation that we've showcased the last few weeks. I've been very pleased with just the time been spent in the building. I've been very pleased with the time our coaching staff has poured into these guys from a standpoint of trying to find out all the details that go on with them building a game plan. These guys, their football IQ has to continue to grow. And that's one thing as you go through the different games throughout the season, like that's the biggest part of it. You have to get better. You have to understand situational football. You have to understand, you know, when you're supposed to and not supposed to do certain things. And more than anything, that's what we got to keep preaching to our team in order to continue to get better. It's the football IQ part of this game has to continue to get better.
And I know it's always next game up, but I am going to ask you a question because weekday CUSA games are going to get started here soon. We're transitioning from playing on Fridays and Saturdays to playing on Tuesdays and Wednesdays. What does that look like for you guys from a coaching staff and player personnel perspective to get prepared not just to change days that you're playing games on, but also you guys are playing games on national television every single game in October. So tell me a little bit about maybe the buzz going around there in the locker room or just in the facility?
Well, I think the person that has got the most difficult schedule is probably our director of operations. You know, just kind of balancing, you know, when we're supposed to do this and when we're supposed to do that, because now the whole routine, a Sunday is really a Thursday or whatever the day is. So, like, she's got her hands full. But for the most part, the biggest thing for us is just to get the guys on a consistent rhythm of a schedule. We're going over October schedule, actually this week, just kind of talk about like, what does this look like? Because now not only do you have to balance just playing football games, you have to also have to balance recruiting as well. So like, you know, bringing guys in on official visits, trying to balance what going out on the road recruiting looks like, trying to balance the game planning piece to it. Because as the season goes on, especially in October now for us, it's going to look a little bit different than just a normal 7-day work week. So, you know, we're going to have to wake up every day and truly look at the calendar because it's not like Groundhog's Day anymore. Every day is not the same once you get in the month of October. Every day presents, I talk about it being like a soap opera. Every day presents a new episode. So you got to be ready for it.
Oh, man, a weekday CUSA soap opera. Dane, we should have been thinking about this. That sounds great. We might have to pitch this to a network here soon. You've given us the idea, Coach Mac. Maybe there'll be some, something coming your way if that ends up coming to fruition. But that's all I have for you today. Go ahead, get prepared for Middle Tennessee to come in this weekend. We appreciate you taking the time out of your busy schedule to sit here with us on CUSA Insider. Good luck to you and the Kennesaw State Owls the rest of the way.
No problem. Thank you so much, Sarah.
Huge thank you to head football coach there at Kennesaw State, Jerry Mack, for joining us here on the program, taking some time out of his busy schedule as he prepares to take on Middle Tennessee in his first conference matchup of the season this weekend. Well, why don't we just lead right on into our week 5 previews then? That was one is obviously a good one on the schedule. Some other conference matchups on the schedule this week, but do you want to go in chronological order for this weekend?
Okay, let's do it.
Perfect. So coming up first, on Saturday, 2:30 p.m. Central Time on the Mountain West Network, we have the Rio Grande Rivalry or the Battle of I-25, whatever you want to call it. New Mexico State at New Mexico. Tell me a little bit about what you're thinking about this one, because honestly, I have no idea.
You and me both. I was honestly a little surprised to see that they came out as 12.5 point underdogs in this one. I know that New Mexico, you know, largely has dominated this rivalry. They had a big win against UCLA a couple weeks ago, but kind of thought that, you know, this is a much improved New Mexico State team. It is in New Mexico, but, you know, even last year, this one was a great game. You know, it was a 50-40 shootout. And again, I think that New Mexico State is largely improved from that one. And they, you know, there were a lot of guys on that team that had to, you know, take that one. And, you know, that was obviously a tough loss for them because of the, you know, the rivalry. But yeah, I think there's some great opportunities here for, you know, coming out of the bye week for New Mexico State to make a statement with this win. Another, you know, great opportunity against another G5 league. I think the one thing I look at is, you know, New Mexico ranks, you know, 99th in passing yards allowed this year. So if I'm Logan Fife, I'm thinking, okay, this could be a breakout game for me, right?
Exactly. And I talked about this earlier when we were just talking one-on-one about what we were expecting from these games this weekend. I think that the big thing for me when I look at New Mexico State is Logan Fife was not there with this team last year. Logan Fife is a great player. He makes plays when he needs to. And that stat right there, New Mexico ranking 99th in pass yards allowed, he could throw it all over the yard against them this weekend, and I would not be one bit surprised. So yeah. I am excited to see how that one turns out.
Yeah, and I think just need to see, you know, just continued disruption from this Mexico State defense. You know, they've got a lot of guys that can, you know, force turnovers, get some big sacks and tackles for loss. And then I think when I look at the red zone stats, you know, those have been dominated by New Mexico State this year. You know, they're first in defense, you know, 13th in offense. So if they can continue to, you know, play well in the short field against the Lobos, that could definitely help them if you know, this ends up being a tight game again like last year.
Yeah, and then also for New Mexico State coming off a bye last week, mm-hmm. had a lot of time to prepare for this game.
Yes.
So we'll see how the Aggies fare in this game. Again, that's 2:30 p.m. Central Time on the Mountain West Network. All right, moving on down chronologically. Liberty at Old Dominion, 5 p.m. Central Time on ESPN+. Tough loss to James Madison. You've got another in-state rival in Old Dominion this week who has shown that they're a really good team as well, beating a Virginia Tech team who, you know, has had its ups and downs, but still Power 5 win there. I think that this is going to be a really tough one for Liberty, but if anything has been shown in the last couple of years in Conference USA, you never know what's going to happen.
Yeah, and I think, you know, we talked about it earlier just with Jamie Chadwell on the sideline. We said this last week going into the James Madison matchup, like, you can't count them out, right? And, you know, again, we'll see what happens with the Ethan Vasco news, how much time he misses, if at all. But, you know, with what they have, you know, on this team, with Jamie Chadwell coaching this team, you have to imagine that they'll still be in this one. Obviously, a big in-state matchup, as you mentioned. It's got to be tough for those guys to have to shake off a big loss to James Madison. You get right back up and, oh, you got Old Dominion, who, yeah, like you said, already has a big Power 4 win under their belts. So the one thing that carries over, I think, from this past week is, you know, James Madison, I wouldn't call them very undisciplined, but in terms of penalties, had been a very undisciplined team. It almost cost them. They had 7 penalties for 72 yards against the Flames. That's something that ODU struggles with a lot this year, too. So the Flags continue to fly against Liberty's opponent. Potentially that helps kind of keep them in this one. But I think where the Flames really have to, you know, lean into if they want to have a chance in this game is they got to get the run game going. Mm-hmm. I know that, you know, they haven't had Vaughn Blue. He's been out for a couple games with an injury. I'm not sure if he has a chance of coming back this week, but with some of the other younger guys that they have in that backfield, you know, they just got to get those guys moving, especially if Vasco misses time, right? Because we saw, you know, how much they struggled to pass the ball with their backup quarterbacks this past week. And, you know, I look at ODU, you know, 124th in rushing defense. I mean, they've gotten gashed by opponents' run games. So if Liberty can channel that, you know, maybe that gets them, you know, in the win column.
And I'm sure that Coach Chadwell is looking at these exact same stats and preaching that exact same message in the locker room this weekend. So we'll have to see how that one goes. Another 5 p.m. game. We've got 5 p.m. Central Time on ESPN+. Kennesaw State's very first conference game of the season. Middle Tennessee at Kennesaw State. Kennesaw State, we talked about this with Coach Mack. 4 home games in a row. This is their 3rd of 4. They've mm-hmm. got this one, and then they've got a home game at or against Louisiana Tech for their weekday games. That's an awesome slate for them. Yeah. I don't even know if any other Conference USA teams can have to say that they have 4 home games in a row.
I think UTEP has they're on a 3-game homestand right now, and I believe that was the only other one that was, you know, about that long or longer.
But yeah, you look at the game they just came off of. Great stuff out of the Owls for this past game against Arkansas State. Looking to like you said, and like Coach Mack said in his interview, stack the wins. Mm-hmm. So what can they do against Middle Tennessee to get that done?
Yeah, I think the one thing that really jumps out to me is this one's going to be a battle in the trenches on both sides, because both these teams are tied for 31st in the country in tackles for loss per game. Both teams also rank in the bottom 30 in tackles for loss allowed. So it's going to be whoever gets the most push, right, on, you know, the other's offensive line. And, you know, again, because if you start first and 10, you get stuffed to second and 12, you know, second and 15. And you are forcing that other team to really kind of pull some stuff out of the bag to get out of some of those jams. That's going to end up being a huge difference maker in this one. And then I think just for individually for each team, I think for, you know, for Kennesaw, if they want to continue to stack the wins, they've got to execute on the leverage downs, right? On third and fourth down. That's where Middle Tennessee's really struggled to get off the field this year. They kind of rank towards the bottom of FBS in their, you know, their third and fourth down conversion defense. Mm-hmm. And then I think for Middle, you know, something that we don't talk a whole lot about with their, you know, is their defense, but with their defense is forcing turnovers. They have been kind of, you know, successful in the turnover game early on this year, top 50 in turnovers gained and turnover margin. Whereas Kennesaw State has really gotten kind of sloppy with the ball. They had a couple fumbles against Arkansas State. And so if they continue to make some of those mistakes, it's going to start to cost them, especially when you get into league play, especially as you just get later in the year when teams really start to figure you out a little bit more. And, you know, and I think just, again, going back to the league play thing, you know, these wins mean so much more. I think for Kennesaw, you know, hot start, they want to obviously build on that with a win, the CUSA opener. Middle Tennessee kind of feels like they've squandered a lot of opportunities in the non-conference. They want to right the ship a little bit. So maybe those, some of those defenders are a little more aggressive. That punch on the ball is a little harder.
Yeah.
Trying to, you know, force some mistakes. So I'm really excited for this one because I think it matches up really well. And yeah, for Kennesaw, I mean, you look at the rest of their schedule and you're like, I think that there's definitely at least four more wins on the schedule and get them, you know, to a bowl game in their second year in FBS, which would be incredible.
Yeah, exactly. I was talking to you guys about that earlier. I think that we might have some bowl bound owls this year, which would be so awesome.
Oh, yeah.
And then obviously you're looking at Vadiato versus Odom. Both of those guys have, you know, Vadiato is a little down maybe this year than what we expected out of him or what he's performed like in years past, but both of them have had great offensive showings these last couple of weeks. We talked about it with Coach Mackin earlier. Amari Odom this week had an incredible game despite some turnover issues, which if he can shore those up, he's going to be doing some great things for sure. He's got good legs, good passing arm. That kid is going places. So super excited for this one. It's our first conference matchup out of three of the day. But moving on to a non-con matchup here, against Southern Miss again, Jacksonville State at Southern Miss, this time in Hattiesburg, 6 p.m. Central Time on ESPN+. We were talking about this in the lunchroom. What's your most exciting game of the week? He's like, non-con or conference, because I'm really excited about this Jacksonville State at Southern Miss game. So tell me a little bit about what excites you about that one so much.
Yeah, I mean, it's, again, you get Southern Miss on the schedule again after Louisiana Tech just beat them. It gives us an opportunity, again, another big non-conference win over another G5 league. And I think for Jack State, you know, last year, this was their turning point. When they hosted Southern Miss, they put up 40 points. This was kind of the coming out party for Tyler Huff, for Trey Stewart, for all these guys. It was a huge defensive game. They were forcing turnovers, had a defensive touchdown. So they had really put it all together in that one, and that started their, you know, incredible run onto a conference championship. Now, obviously, this Southern Miss team is a lot different than that Southern Miss team, but I think that they probably had this one, you know, I know that everyone says they don't have games circled on their calendar, but this one, you know, again, it's kind of in the same boat. It's, you know, right here before they get into the thick of conference play, and gives them an opportunity to make a statement in this game. So I think they just got to stay true to, you know, what they've done the last few weeks. They've averaged 294 yards rushing in the last three games, obviously, you know, eclipsing the 300 yard mark in their two wins this year. But I think what I like most about them recently, you know, is they've been balanced out with some great passing performances by Gavin Wimsatt. You know, we saw flashes of Tyler Huff being able to pass the ball last year, but we knew what they were doing, right? They were going to run the ball. They're going to, you know, just pound the ground on the way to wins. And so if they can continue to get just that complementary offense where they're able to, you know, Southern Miss has to kind of gamble a little bit on which way they're going to go and how they're going to win this game, cause a little bit of confusion on the defense. I think that's going to help them out a lot.
And not only that, they're spreading the love as to who is scoring the ball as well. Yeah. So when you're Southern Miss looking at this, is there's not just one or two guys that they're going to every single time. They've definitely been spreading the love there. Now, Hattiesburg is a tough place to play.
Yeah.
Having been to several football games there, I cannot deny that the game atmosphere there is really great. So I think that'll be, you know, something for Jacksonville State to be preparing for. It's going to be loud in there. They're going to have a tough time hearing calls and all that sort of stuff. So definitely something to prep for in the week leading up to. But like you said, another great opportunity to get a win over another G5 opponent. And I, just like we stacked up wins against Nevada, I'd love to stack up two wins against Southern Miss.
Right.
Let's
yeah,
do it. Let's
exactly.
do it, Gamecocks.
Yep. Speak it into existence.
Yes, I like it. I love it. All right. Another 6 p.m. game here, a conference matchup that I think a lot of people are looking forward to watching. WKU at Missouri State, 6 p.m. Central Time on ESPN+. I think the biggest storyline for this one off the field is that this is the alma mater of Missouri State's AD Patrick Ransdell and head coach Ryan Beard, which is so crazy that that worked out that way.
Wild, right? So, and even that's like fun. Them coming into the league, you know, we've been talking about this since, you know, July 1st, but now that it's here, it's like, okay, you know, because of where both these teams are, you know, WKU off to a 3-1 start, Missouri State sitting at 2-2. You know, this is their CUSA opener. Like, there's just so much pageantry around this one that it definitely creates a fun game, regardless of how the game ends up going. But, you know, this one, I think, should be a really exciting one. Top two passing offenses in the league, WKU sitting in first, followed very closely by Missouri State, led by Jacob Clark, who we talked about earlier. I think that obviously we know what we're getting from Jacob Clark in this offense through the air. I think when you look at how WKU has fared against opponents' run games is, can they find a, you know, a complementary run game with Shamari Lawrence kind of at the head of that, to, you know, to be able, you know, like I said, with Jack State, you know, being able to pair the run and the pass, you know, can they continue to do that, or can they find a way to do that, to get a win against WKU? And then for WKU, they've got a league high 15 touchdowns in the red zone. I mean, yes, guys just get down the field, and then once they're there, it's pretty much a certainty what's about to happen. They've only had one trip to the red zone that did not end in a touchdown.
Wow, so, that's incredible.
Yeah, and it was a field goal.
Right.
Yeah.
Still put points on the board. Awesome.
Right. And so for Missouri State, you know, they've given up 14 red zone scores on 16 trips. So you know, again, if they can't shore up kind of that, the short yardage situations, then it's going to be, might spell some trouble for the Bears. But,
well, this has been one I've been looking forward to, because if you like the pass, you should tune into this game on Saturday.
Definitely.
Because Jacob Clark versus Maverick McIver, it's going to be really fun to watch regardless of how the game ends up. I think it's going to be a lot of passes through the air, some long balls down the field. Those receivers, too, can make some incredible plays.
Oh, yeah.
So I'm really excited just to be able to watch just the high-flying action in this game. But like you said, turnover tops. They're trying to work their way back in to our news cycle here. Uh-huh. So we'll have to see what they can do there against the Bears. Again, that game is at 6 p.m. Central Time on ESPN+. All right. To round out the weekend, we have another conference matchup. Louisiana Tech at UTEP, 8 p.m. Central Time on ESPN+. UTEP gets another one at home against who many would say is the top contender right now in CUSA and the Bulldogs. So let's talk about this game. But, I mean, UTEP's defense, I think that a lot of people have been really high on them, but Louisiana Tech on the defensive side of the ball getting all the news here lately. So let's just talk a little bit about this game.
Yeah. And I think this is definitely a candidate for, you know, a game that I was the most excited for, just because of, you know, what we've talked about with Louisiana Tech's defense, and then against a UTEP offense that, you know, has kind of found a resurgence with Malachi Nelson under center for them. But yeah, I mean, we got to talk about the fact that, yeah, La Tech's defense top 10 nationally in defensive touchdowns, interceptions, and turnovers gained. And when you look at the fact that, you know, again, at the end of this past game, Malachi Nelson throws a pair of interceptions. He's now got five on the year. The Miners have five interceptions thrown on the year. So, you know, if they don't play a clean game and they allow Louisiana Tech to take advantage of those mishaps, potentially turn it into a touchdown like they have in three games so far this year, that's going to be trouble for them. But yeah, I mean, the UTEP defense, you know, they definitely excel at, you know, pressure, applying pressure onto opponents. That, you know, they rank towards the top in tackles for loss and sacks. They've got a lot of guys at that, you know, the bandit position that they call it, that are just really big disruptors. But yeah, the slot tech defense is just on another level. So, you know, with Malachi Nelson, again, coming off a 400-yard game, going against slot tech defense, that when they're not forcing mistakes, is giving up the, you know, one of the highest passing yards totals in the country. Mm-hmm. So if he can play a clean game and still, you know, be as aggressive as he'd like to be, that might be an edge for UTEP. But man, that's just really hard to pick against Bulldogs.
Right? Yeah. I you putting that stat in there about the passing yards allowed for Louisiana Tech, I was so surprised by that.
Yeah.
Because you watch them play and they look like they're putting on a defensive clinic every single week. But you miss the big chunk plays that they're giving away. You know, those couple 40-yard passes down the field that they're missing out on, and it all stacks up and ends up puts them at 114 in passes allowed. So yeah. I think this is going to be an interesting one. We'll see if Louisiana Tech can keep their top spot as in a lot of people's minds for a berth in the CUSA championship. But yeah, lots of fun games on the slate this weekend. We got three conference games, which means we are guaranteed some wins, and we're also guaranteed some losses, unfortunately.
True.
But
yeah.
Hey, I love conference season.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I'm ready to get it started here. And then, yeah, weekday CUSA is right around the corner. So obviously that comes with a lot of excitement. You know, some of you may have seen we sent out some shirts to some of our media members, just other
on the set. Today.
I know we'll have them next week because, yeah, we've got a big episode coming up next week. I don't know if we even want to tease that, but we'll obviously be talking a lot of weekday CUSA. But love seeing that, you know, some of our broadcasters for those games, some of our beat writers, other people have been posting pictures of their shirts they've gotten. So we had to make sure we showed them some love, get them geared up for a big month.
Yeah. Wear your shirts, people. If you have one and you haven't showed it to us yet that you got it in the mail, put it on Twitter.
Mm-hmm.
We'll be there to engage with you.
Oh, yeah.
All right, everybody. Thank you so much for listening to today's episode of CUSA Insider, the official podcast of Conference USA. If you're not already, make sure you're following us on social media, on X and Instagram at CUSA Insider Pod. If you've found the show in video form, thank you for watching us on YouTube. If you're listening on audio and you want to watch us on video, go to youtube.com and just search Conference USA and you'll find us right there on the Conference USA homepage in the podcast section. And then as always, if you have any questions, comments, or concerns, you can email us at CUSAinsider@conferenceusa.com. All right, everyone, have a great week. Thank you for listening to CUSA Insider, the official podcast of Conference USA. I'm Sarah Rudolph, signing off.